You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Stephen A. from Hollis, Queens, and the Michael K. Show starts now. Holla at your boy, Michael, Don Juan, and Peter.
Thank you, Stephen A., and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It's July 27th, 2021. The gang is back together again. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours. The other 19 and a half, your responsibility.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, I've got to clean up a lot of things that were said yesterday.
What?
That were misrepresented.
Ooh, by who?
Well, we'll start with Peter, okay?
Yeesh.
Yeah.
I don't like this start at all.
Was told that Peter said that I never stopped bothering him about being late.
No, I didn't say that.
What did you say?
Don, how would you say I worded it?
That it obviously was a thing. It bothered you, and he believed that without us bringing it up, today on the show, you would have brought up the fact that he was late. That it irked you a little.
Like, I didn't say you made it a thing the whole day. I said for about 10 minutes, I could tell it was on your mind.
Right.
No, it bothered you. He texted me. First of all, I very clearly wanted to find out what time he was going to show up.
That is true.
Which makes sense.
Right? And so he gave me a parameter, which was wide, and then he's passing the parameter.
Yeah.
And I said, you are a lower body part. That's what I called him. That's the only time I referred to it. I didn't refer to it when he was there. Not a word. So he's making it up.
Okay.
But no. When I showed up and I apologized, you went, well, you're you.
Yeah.
You are you.
All Peter was saying is that it clearly irked you.
Well, why wouldn't somebody being late irk me?
That's fair.
That's all I said, though.
But that's all he said.
Especially food that could spoil. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know what we were in for. My God. But for the record, I didn't say that it irked you all day. I said it irked you. Whereas, for example,
I thought I was a very gracious host.
Oh, you were fantastic. It was particularly Jody. But like, for example, if I went to Don's house and I was a half hour late for a mid-afternoon thing, I'd say, oh, I'm so sorry. And he'd go, what? Don't worry about it. Shut up. Anyways,
Don,
I can tell you didn't do that.
Well, wait a second. I had a hard out. I had to go to work. So the later you were, the less time I could spend with you. So take a walk.
Yeah, but come on. You just lost me there.
Why?
See? All right. I know you enjoy Peter's company, but this was all about, you know, Peter getting to hang by the pool and stuff. Well, don't make it seem like you were upset you were losing time with Peter.
Exactly what it was.
I don't know. And you stayed anyway.
And losing time with Natalie.
That's right. Well, that might be, because there's that area.
She is a lovely girl.
But just
thank you. Thank you.
Very, very weird.
Peter's dog has issues.
Excuse me?
Angry, vicious. Wouldn't even play with my dog. Problem dog.
Well,
not happy. Not a happy dog.
No, my dog's
kind of sloughs along.
Well, I think, let me use Peter's analogy here. From the information that I gathered from the pictures that I saw, Bear is Aaron Judge, Butters is Pete Alonso.
That is it. That's it.
Both very good players, but one's just a little bit awkward. Butters
no,
a little
just
bit.
Trying too hard, bro.
Butters a tryhard.
She's 8 months old.
Well, also right, in time.
So, well, I mean, there
this
have
is
been
not
other
permanent.
Dogs
this,
over the house.
These observations aren't.
Them, and they chase, but right away, Bear was very, very peculiar. You know, sort of barking right away.
I have a question. Did Bear attack the dog?
Did he what?
Did he harm the dog?
No. You're lucky that Butter didn't harm Bear.
All Bear did was chase and bark. And that's to be expected when you have a bigger 8-month-old dog.
It's a road game for
Bear. It's a road game. And your dog's twice the size of Bear and really trying to play. All Bear did, like I said he would, was set the boundaries of not me, pal, not me.
Right.
That's it.
Right away, when he came into the house.
That what you should appreciate that. He's a dog after your own heart.
Whatever. And then I heard that he's complaining about the lobster rolls.
Wait, what?
No, that did
that it
not
was it was over the top. It was a show of wealth. Well, let me just get one
that
thing
is
straight,
not
guys.
What I,
that's not let what he.
That's
said.
Not what
this
I
is
said.
What Andrew told. What'd you say?
I said, can you? I said, you want to talk about how high class the K's right. are? They served lobster roll at a brunch.
It was all complimentary.
I said it was delicious. I was complimentary.
Yes.
All I said was that it was very high power move. That's
well,
all I said.
But well, so Don, I'll talk to you. You know, Jody and I hardly ever argue. This time we did. So she made an order for a pound of lobster, whatever it's called that you put in lobster roll, at this place called I don't want to give the name, but they're really nice people.
Okay.
And she said my husband will pick it up. So I didn't know. A fish store. I have no idea. Right?
Sure.
None.
That's not
so
your thing.
my plan was I was going to go out to Lenny's Bagels, buy 12 bagels, get some lox spread.
Okay. Right.
And that
like
would be fine. Like
a normal
person,
person
would.
Yes.
And then I right across the street from Lenny's is this fish store. So I went to pick it up. The most awkward thing, Don, they go, I had a mask on. So I said, picking up for Jody, name is Michael. The guy goes, are you Michael K? I said, yeah. He goes, are you picking this up for Rosenberg and Miss Hatton? I said, what? Yeah, we heard on the show on Friday that he was coming over. So I picked up the pound of the lobster, or whatever it is, right? And he said, would you like to pay with credit card or cash? I said, I'll do credit card. Don, you know what a pound was? Would you like to have a number?
I'd like
Give
a
me
guess.
A number. Yeah, you guess, Peter.
I'd like to go with $115.
Don?
$150.
No, it was $77. I almost threw up.
All right,
$77. The lock spread was $20, and that made me upset. And I got home. I said, are you serious, Jody? $77?
Wow. Wow. You are low class. And she is high class. My God.
But, you know, but also, it's not that crazy for the host to be able to partake. Michael's not partaking in
I'm
that.
I'm not partaking. That's wasted money. That's
that
I could
true.
Flush $77 down the toilet. Same effect to me.
But Jody had one. She's a normal human being.
Yeah, Jody loves lobster. Good for her. Good for you.
How much was left over?
I don't know. I don't like a crustacean. I want to know part of it. If it's out of the sea, it's not for me.
But back to the original point.
The thing that was left over was the lobster, the lox spread.
I'm the only one who had any.
Peter was very complimentary of everything. So I don't know what message boy.
I got a message that he was not high on it.
No, not true. You heard that from jerks on the internet.
No, I heard that from Andrew. Is he a jerk?
That is not what I said.
What'd you say?
I said that Peter being late was clearly a thing, which is true.
Thank you.
And I said that the food order was described. Peter, what was the word I used, Michael? I said that Peter kind of viewed it as the strata of society that you are operating in.
But it's not. Yes. I don't operate in
that's
that
what I said.
Maybe Jody does.
You,
I don't.
No, but that's it. You're one now.
I would have gotten
him in the
bagels and butter. That's what I would have gotten him.
This
bagels
is your best
butter.
Friend. You
Some
are one.
Cheez-its. Yeah.
You're Apple K.
Michael, you know if you showed up to my house for brunch and you sat down and everyone had an individual lobster roll sandwich with potato chips, you'd go, wow, Peter, lobster roll?
No, I would have said, you have anything that I can eat.
Well, that's true. That too. But you would have been impressed. But you would have said, wow, that's something. Well, anyone would think that.
All right, so I've got some other scores to settle.
Okay.
For Red Sox fans and people at EEI, grow up, okay? Grow yourself up. You're not kids anymore. I never said anything nasty about Red Sox fans. I said what play, and you can figure it out for yourself. Players that have played for the Red Sox and the Yankees have told me Red Sox fans sit on their hands until there's something to cheer about. It's unbelievable. WEEI must be really hard up for programming because this is a thing now because the Red Sox have a picture from Sunday's game with their fans standing and cheering and go, greatest fans in the world. And they go, oh, Michael K, EI sends out, Michael K is going to report this. Really? Grow yourself up. I mean, really? You got nothing else to talk about? Patriots are back. They might make the playoffs this year. Really? You got other Red Sox are in first place, and you're worried about something that I said that was relayed to me from players that have played. And then to prove a point, some Red Sox fans showed, well, look how they're cheering on Kike Hernandez before he got the hit. You know why? Because there were three hits before that. You want to know how loud it was beginning the eighth inning? This loud. Not a word was spoken. Stop it. It's not an insult. It's a fact. And then the fool, the mental, the mental small fry who called in yesterday said that I said Red Sox fans are dumb. You're dumb. I never said any such thing. I love Boston. It's one of my favorite towns. But, I mean, talk about an inferiority complex. The Yankee announcer relays something that players told him, and you're up in arms. Wow. E.I., you got nothing else to talk about? Just me? You know what? I'm quite flattered.
No.
And for Red Sox fans that are upset, I've got one of my five fingers that I'd like to show you. I'm not going to tell you which one. You could pick one of the five. There's a bird now loose. There's a bird loose in the mall.
However, the one thing I'll say is, I don't knock EEI for making it a topic. It's an interesting subject. That's a good topic. The Yankee announcer said, now them being sensitive and crying about it like you said something insulting, to me that's something else altogether, and I'm happy to scrap all day over it. But I won't knock that as a subject. I think it's interesting. Don, don't you agree?
To fixate on it and keep sending out stuff on Twitter about Michael
Kay saying
this?
I didn't read what
this?
They said. I just saw they did a segment on it. That's all I knew.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Oh, they're really upset at Michael Kay. Oh, no. How am I going to go on?
But what I don't understand
is, you mean
is,
that EEI won't call and ask me to be a guest? Oh, why are I don't they know upset if I could go on.
And I mentioned this yesterday. I'm not really sure why they'd be upset at you. Obviously, you talk to former Red Sox who played for the Yankees. So who is that? Is that Johnny Damon? Is that Wade Boggs? There's been several. So all you're doing is regurgitating information that you had heard from them. Now, you might agree with the observation, but
Donnie,
it came up as, hey, this is what former Red Sox had told me about the crowd. First of all, it wasn't all that insulting, because I could turn around and say, the fact that they gave Herman a standing ovation is pretty classy.
Right.
You know, so you're just saying that it's two different types of crowds, two different types of city. One, you know, anticipates. I always look at New York with the two strikes standing up, anticipating the third strike. A lot of cities don't do that. They think it's a jinx or whatever. It's not saying you never question their passion or their intelligence. It was just the way they go about things, an observation from a former player that had played from both teams.
But I'll tell you this, I agree with those players. I've been to Boston now for 30 years, and that's what they do. They wait for something to cheer for rather than engaging and getting the team up to do something. So the fact that they were going nuts when Hernandez came up to face Loaiza, that doesn't prove anything. Tell me what they were doing before Verdugo got the double. I'll tell you what they're doing. Absolutely nothing. They sit there stunned that their team's not doing anything. That's the way it is. That's what players have told me, and that's what I've observed. It is not a knock, and that's the way it is in a lot of cities. It's different than New York. It's different than Met fans. It's different than Yankee fans. New York fans cheer to get their team to do something. Boston fans cheer after their team does something. Live with it.
Why is it so offensive?
Oh, my God. You would think that I insulted their mother. They get their nose out of joint. They're so parochial about things. Listen, you have three titles since the Yankees won one. Stop.
Well,
calm down.
And also, you're playing to your room. This is a broadcast, and this was Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So this was on Yes. So you're not talking to Red Sox fans or Padre fans or Ranger fans. You're talking to Yankee fans. You weren't doing a national game on ESPN or Fox. You're talking to your constituents. You're talking to your room, giving an observation that maybe they didn't know about Red Sox fans. How are you supposed to know that they're going to be Red Sox fans that are going to hear and analyze it? Maybe that's something you would not necessarily say on a national level, but locally talking to other Yankee fans, what's the issue?
Also, whenever I say something, because it is on the Yes Network and we're kind of like a national network and the fact that so many people in so many cities get us, I assume that everybody's going to hear it. I wasn't hiding anything. Another thing I had to get up my chest.
Go ahead.
The people that come at me with Yankee boys. So Don was very aggressive in criticizing Aaron Boone yesterday.
He's 3.5!
And so I get, oh, Kay should just stay on vacation all the time so that Don could speak the truth. I've never told Don in 20 years of doing this show, never once, don't talk about this, ever. He can talk about whatever he wants. I have no problem with what he said yesterday. And for those that think I'm Yankee boy, you don't listen. I don't know how much more I could criticize a team that I'm actually the broadcaster for. But the thing that gets me is on Twitter that people are going to say, you know what? I guess I was exchanging with fans. I was having fun with the fact that about the Odor bunt. And when he finally swung away, he did damage, you know.
Right.
So I was having fun. So one guy goes, imagine Gary Cohen ever doing this. This guy has no class. All he is a Yankee shill. Now, he's talking about me on the Yankee games. So I would like to ask everybody out there, am I supposed to be against the Yankees on the YES Network? Am I? Is Gary against the Mets on the SNY Network? Is anybody who is a broadcaster of a team against their team? I honestly, if I was double-jointed, I would pat myself on the back. The amount of times I go out on a limb and probably jeopardize my employment because of the fact that I am so damn honest when the team doesn't play well. And I keep getting hit with Yankee boys. So I've made this decision. Peter will probably say I'm wrong. I like Twitter. I've learned to like it. But the times that I'm going to engage back and forth with people that really aren't bright enough to have conversations with me, those are over. So everybody who says, well, why does Michael's not going to answer anything anymore. Twitter's going to be a one-way street for Michael. It's like when he used to date. It's just what it's all about Michael. I'm going to get information. You can make your comments there. But if you think I'm going to answer or go back with you, those days are over because it's a cesspool. Most people that are adding me about the Odor bunt, you don't know what you're talking about. You have no clue about baseball. If you still think that Odor should have bunted when Ottavino was on the mound and you had first and second and nobody out and you already had a one-run lead, you don't deserve my interaction and you're not going to get it anymore. So any kind of interaction that you get with me, you call 1-800-919-3776. You could talk on this phone to me. Say those things to me directly, but in times of me answering back on Twitter, sorry, it's over. Now, I'll be on Twitter. I'll put things out that I want out there, but in terms of interacting with you and going back and forth, never. I'm not doing it. It's not worth it. It's not worth my angst because you can't real. And then when you do answer people, I'm sure you've seen this too, Peter, when you actually answer people back, they go, wow, you're so thin-skinned. So you can't defend yourself. So now I will not say a word other than what I want to say. I'm not going to answer back any critiques, anything about the show. No, you cost yourself. You cost yourself the ability to actually engage with a veritable genius, a member of Mensa. It's over now. You cost yourself that. You know how costly that is? You actually had access to a major league broadcaster. How many broadcasters of major league teams actually engage with fans? Not many. Well, you cost yourself that now. I'll still see what you say after a game or whatever the case may be. But in terms of me interacting, over. It's like you had a front row seat at a lecture by Albert Einstein, and now Albert just cut you off. You've been cut off by me. Do you like that now? All the people that say Yankee boy, now you cost yourself. The only way you could ever talk with me is on this show. Is that fair?
I have no problem with it. I don't think you ever should have been going back and forth with people like that.
You're right. You're right. And you've been telling me that, and you know what? I've learned.
I do it too much, and you do it too much. It's amazing, though. It's true. We've talked about this recently. People feel that the only opinion worth giving is one that could cost you your job.
Right. They want me to say things, and I am so fortunate that I work for an organization and bosses at YES that they let me say whatever I want. But I'm sure, Peter, that there's a tipping point.
Of course.
Like if I went on a Yankee game and go, you know what? By the way, I think Aaron Boone should be fired. I don't think that would fly. It's not a talk show I'm doing on the game. I'm doing the game.
Right.
This is a talk show. I could give those opinions on this show, but not on the game, and don't expect me to. And if you do, then turn down the sound and just watch the pretty picture fly by.
If I said something yesterday that Michael wouldn't say, it's only because he doesn't agree with it, not because he's scared. Do you hear the things that he says about the team? And he's the only person in the country that actually has a talk show and has to talk about something that is like 75% of what we talk about during baseball season. So Gary doesn't have a show. Believe me, if Gary had a show, he would be going through the same thing that Michael has to go through. And I think Gary's a professional, and he probably would be just like Michael and be fair and honest in his assessment of the team. But Michael, it's not just fans, it's people in the media. That unless you agree with them and believe that Boone and Cashman should be fired, you're a shill. But can you at least have an intelligent conversation about it? It's got to be hostile. It's got to be you got to call him a shill. You can't just say, well, I disagree with you, Michael.
That's not the way
I think about it, Michael. It's got to be, oh, you're just a shill.
Don knows this, okay? And he disagrees with me about it. I'm not defending. I certainly haven't been defending Cashman. I have been defending Boone a bit because of the fact that I believe that he's working in concert with the front office. But there's not one coach or manager in the 20 years that we've done the show that I have ever called to be fired. Don disagrees with me. He thinks that if somebody should be fired, I think there's a family behind it. I don't want anybody to lose their job. That's just the way I am. That's why all the people that say, you know, Kay shouldn't be an announcer for the Yankees, he should lose his job. You should have that on your head, that if it happens to me and bad things happen after that, have it on your head that you're actually rooting for somebody to lose their job. Now, you can say it about a manager and a GM because they're out there, but just because you don't like something that I say, that you have the nerve to actually tweet that out, I got messages for you. Let's put it this way. When I'm done with both jobs, I will open fire on Twitter. You'll know exactly what I think of your stupid words. Because now I can't do it. I'm not allowed. Both companies that I work for wouldn't allow it. When I first got on Twitter, I got in trouble about it. Somebody insulted Jody, and I went back at that person. And I got called on the carpet because I didn't know what Twitter was all about then. Now I do because I'm smarter than you.
This has been a strong take. I appreciate it. I enjoy it. I'm always down for the eggs paying the price, and now they lose out on you. How will they sleep at night, Michael?
Knowing
they can't interact with you.
Yeah.
By the way, are we allowed to play any of the audio from EEI, though? I am curious.
It's some of their hosts, too.
I mean, that's what I want to
like really firing shots on Twitter like they're hurting my feelings. I couldn't care less. I will still lovingly walk down Newbury Street because I love that town. I love that ballpark. And the fans have always been great whenever they see me on the street. I just made a statement. They are not preactive fans. They're reactive fans. Or proactive fans.
That's
the
word.
They're not those fans. They're not proactive. They are reactive. They will cheer until they're hoarse when their team does something well. But if their team's not doing anything, they're not going to push them to that level. And that's what I've been told by people that have played in both places. And that's what I've observed. And if it hurts your feelings, I'm so sorry. But I'm glad I could give you so many segments of programming. And keep those tweets coming. Okay, because they'll never be answered, ever. If you really have something nasty to say, call up and say it to me. We got a lot of stuff to do. I don't even know how we can fit it in.
Oh, well, it was a start.
Was that a strong enough open?
It was strong. I would like to hear something that EEI said, and I do hope someone from Boston calls up to fight you. I'm here for that. And I got your back, pal.
There's nothing they could say that I would back off from. I was never rude about the fans. Again, I think the fans are wonderful. I think the town is great. Probably town number three for me in this country.
That's very high.
New York, Chicago, and Boston, in that order.
That's too high.
Why?
I just think it's too high.
You don't like Boston?
I like Boston. I spent a lot of time in Boston. It's a nice town. Well, it's got some drawbacks.
Well, what would you put above Boston?
Philly.
No way.
I put Philly above Boston.
No. I mean, I'd have to consider Seattle. Seattle's a great town.
Atlanta's a great city.
Yeah, Boston's better.
Huh.
I see, my buddy, Tony Maserati, you know, former newspaper writer and now a big-time afternoon drive host.
Did he talk about this too?
I don't know if Tony did. Tony's friends with me. I don't know if he would.
Well, that's why I really want to hear what they had to say. Because I want to hear if they misconstrued it, too. I'm curious.
Andrew's going to get some of it. All right, good. We have the Mets have a little bit of a problem with their draft pick, and they have a little bit of a problem scoring one run in 14 innings, and the trade deadline is 4 o'clock on Friday. So we got a lot of stuff to break down. Let's have some fun today. Just had a, you know, I had some air some family grievances. That's not wrong, right?
No,
I'm
allowed to
air my grievances.
Oh, please.
I should put a silver pole here.
Right. Excuse me?
The airing of grievances.
Oh, 3 right, o'clock right. hour, we're going to have feats of strength.
I thought it was a major flex on my part that I will now not interact with anybody on Twitter.
Well, let's see. Let's talk in a year and see if you stuck with it.
Oh, that's fine. I will.
Before you start patting yourself on the back. Don, you agree with that part, right?
Yeah, well, let's see how. But I believe him this time.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so mind-numbing. Because you know what I've learned? You can't convince people that are ignorant. If somebody's dug in on a topic, even if you make every single statement, and then when you finally get them, you know what they say? You're really thin-skinned. Well, that's no secret. I've said my skin is literally translucent. That's how thin it is. But I think I'm allowed to answer critics. Critics want to critique, and then if you answer them back, you're thin skin.
Right.
Well, that doesn't make them asses for critiquing me, but it makes me thin skin when I answer them back. That calculus doesn't work for me. I'm sorry.
Well, it works for them because it creates an argument they can't lose.
Right. There you go, Don. There you go. So when they finally lose an argument, their comeback is, you're so thin skinned. Gary Cohen would never do this. Well, he's not on Twitter.
If you care, you're thin skin. There's no, that's the thing. That's why there's no win. Every time there's a WWE storyline, if I say I liked it, it's because I work there.
Right.
They wouldn't be happy unless I risk throwing the whole thing away. Unless I tweet at Vince McMahon and insult him, they will not be impressed.
Can you do that? That would be good for the show.
It's like it's some surprise that like it has to be a secret that I would lean. If there's any bias in me, it's leaning in favor of WWE. That's shocking.
And let me give you another thing along those lines what Peter's saying. I lean toward the Yankees. Yeah. The Yankees now own the YES Network. I grew up a Yankee fan since I was 9 years old. It's better for my network money-wise when the Yankees win. So, yeah, I'm not rooting for them to lose on the air. Shock, right? Shock.
And because of that, every opinion you have to these people is invalid.
Right.
You can't also have a valid opinion where you're critical or you let's say you believe Aaron Judge is actually having a good season. You're a Yankee boy.
Right.
Well, it's like, but I'm just reading. I'll tell you,
Peter, the flip side is when I criticize the Yankees, then the other people come out of their caves and go, how dare you? You're the Yankee announcer. We've had those phone calls. You shouldn't be ripping them. So it's a can't-win situation. And that's why, like they do in Atlantic City and Vegas, when a blackjack dealer's done, I'm out. I'll see what you say, but you're not going to get me to interact. So you cost yourself the chance to interact with brilliance. Sorry.
Sad. Very sad.
You've robbed yourself. Think about that. All you Cheeto dust people that sit in your mom's basement with her iPad, you've now ruined it for the good ones.
Right.
Like Karen Veenstra said, don't let it ruin for the good ones. Yeah, but you know what? The good ones should be policing the bad ones then. Because I'm not doing it anymore.
If you got the guts and you've got the will and you got
call
the
in.
Ammunition,
right.
You call up, you sit on hold, and you go back and forth.
Right.
But you better bring it.
Bring it hard. Man up, women up, whatever you want. Let's do it. 1-800-919-3776. We'll break down the Mets, what they need to do, as they're in the middle of a 5-game series with the Braves. What a fortuitous split of a doubleheader. They scored one run and they got a win. Pretty good. And the Atlanta Braves scored two runs and they got a win. It's Kay LeGreco, Rosenberg, and you right here on YES at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right, so the Jets and the Giants reporting today. And the biggest story on the Jets, let's be honest, everybody, is Zach Wilson. They don't even have a legitimate backup quarterback, so this is not going to be one of these things where this guy is going to be eased in. He's going to be the starting quarterback, barring injury, on day one. Every day he misses is a day he can't afford to miss. And the Jets are still battling him on a contract. I think there are two first-round picks that are not signed. Come on. This stuff should have been done a week ago. This is not smart. this is counterproductive. And then when you hear that it's about voidable years or it's about offset, you know what offset language is? If the Jets cut him and owe him $10 million, and then he signs with another team for $8 million, the Jets want offset language that they only have to pay him $2 million. They want to be offset by the other team. It's so stupid, because if he really wanted to stick it to the Jets, let's say the Jets cut him and another team wants him, he just had the team sign him for $1 million and stick the Jets with $9 million. Why are you battling on offset language? It's so stupid. And I'll tell you this, Joe Douglas, and I like Joe Douglas. If this guy gets cut after 3 years, you're fired anyway. You're out. Your whole future depends on this guy. And now you're going to play this stupid little money game with him? And for his agents, too, don't you think it's kind of important for this guy to be in from the very beginning so he could get everything going with his teammates, the trust, and he could be a leader out there? This is ridiculous. It's a bad look. It could be solved by the time they take the field tomorrow, but it's not solved yet, and they're reporting today. Don, Peter, this is an awful look for the Jets and a bad look for Zach Wilson.
Well, the same thing happened with Darnold, if you remember.
Yeah, it did.
You know, we were out there, the first day that we were out there at camp, I forget when in the week it was or how deep into camp it was,
I think it was
day
he
signed.
4 days in. 4 days in.
So I'm not going to get crazy yet until you start really getting deeper in camp. Again, Darnold came in, signed 4 days in, and it was seamless. He was, you know, starting on opening day against the Detroit Lions, so wasn't a big issue. So we're still a ways away from it being a big issue. Now, I don't know if he could afford to go deeper the way you did in the past, because you only have three preseason games as opposed to four back in the day. So you've got a little less time to kind of get yourself ready. But I'm not going to freak out yet. We haven't hit that line of demarcation where it's going to be any kind of a problem. I'm sure they're going to work itself out.
Yeah, but the fact that he's not there today, you know, we always use this word, it's a terrible optic over offset language. Again, if he's cut after the third year, Joe Douglas is done. So is Robert Saleh.
I was going to say, I mean, like, a couple things bother me about it. Number one, let's not look back on the whole thing with Darnold, because I think that when you look back and see any similarity to Darnold, that's bad.
Exactly. Thank you.
In any way. Oh, well, it started that way with Darnold. Great. Well, everything sucked.
Well, I don't think his play was because he signed 4 days late.
But we don't know.
I understand that. But what I'm saying to you, Don, is if I'm a Jets fan, I don't want anything that reminds me of Darnold. Nothing. Even though he's a great guy. But, and furthermore, offset language? Like, you're getting a ton of money. Not only are you getting a ton of money, you're the presumptive starter of the New York Jets. And you're going to be the leader of this team as a kid. You're going to have to lead veterans. And the message you're sending early on is like, yeah, I'll see you when I get there. I got to handle this offset language. I don't know, man.
And it's not about money, Peter, because the slots are what the slots are.
No, the money's the money.
The money is the money. And
there's
the Jaguars didn't argue over offset money. Trevor Lawrence is there today. It's silly. These are dumb fights. These are dumb hills to climb on. Well, you can't do anything, Don, where people have the opportunity to say, same old Jets. You don't want to do that.
And
offset language, this is ridiculous. It's not even about money.
Well, let's jump in there a little bit more, because no one really understands what offset language is. Correct me if I'm wrong. That language is to protect the Jets if things don't work out, correct?
Right.
So if you're Zach Wilson, aren't you thinking this doesn't even matter anyway?
Because it's going to work out.
I will have re-signed by then. I'll already be a long-term quarterback by the time this even comes up.
And for the Jets, too, again, I'll repeat the same thing. If it doesn't work out with Zach Wilson, we got a lot of problems. You set the franchise back 5, 6, 7, 8 years. That's what you did. So you're worried about releasing him? Offset language? You should be ashamed of yourself. And as Peter said, Zach Wilson should be ashamed of himself. He shouldn't even let the thought enter that this marriage could end. They want to be together for 15 years. It's such a bad look. And again, first practice is tomorrow. If he shows up, as Don said, no harm, no foul. But why do you want to look like this? Why? Why is it the Jets? Why did they have to look like this? Why did the Jaguars get their deal done with Trevor Lawrence? Without even an eye blink, boom, it was done. Now we have to see. Now we have to have Zach Wilson watch. Oh, they can't get out of their own way sometimes.
Well, listen, I don't know who to blame on this because I'm not privy to the negotiations. You know, but Zach Wilson could be just as much to blame as the Jets are.
They're both wrong. You know, Zach Wilson's agent is wrong, too.
You know, so I don't think the Jets should cave against anything that they fundamentally are against. You make your deal with your draft choice and you move on. And I would think he'd want to be there and get going and get playing because every indication is he's the starter because who would be? They haven't went out and got a legitimate backup to where you can even think about not having him be the starter on opening day. So every day lost, I think, is hurting him for that first game of the season. But again, I'm not going to freak out about it. Yeah, all right, Sam Darnold didn't work out here, but it wasn't because it took 4 days to sign him into camp. Like I said, he was ready to go and actually played a pretty decent first game against the Detroit Lions, the pick six on his first pass notwithstanding. So I'm not going to freak out yet, but yeah, we can get close to this. Because you'd like to see this guy hit the ground running, have a big preseason, get things going. Everything about the Jets is revolving around him. I think Joe Douglas has done a decent job putting together an offensive line, getting him some weapons, but it all hinges on him.
Well, here's the coach, Robert Saleh, talking about the possibility of Wilson possibly missing practices.
Yeah, I mean, it's from a rookie standpoint, you need as many reps as you can, and veterans always get off days here and there anyway, so they do miss, but it's something that he'll have to navigate through. And I've got a lot of faith in Zach, too. You know, he's incredibly intelligent. He's got a tremendous drive, so when he does get here, I know that somehow, some way, he'll make up for it. So,
well, that's the right thing for the coach to say, but he wants him there every single second he could have him. 1-800-919-3776.
Because you don't want to hear the coach say, you know, make up for. Well, why are you putting obstacles up for yourself in a very important rookie year? So he's going to have to make up ground? You don't want to see that.
The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Let's go to Andrew in the Bronx. Andrew.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. You?
Doing great, doing great. I just want to talk about why the Jets are what they are right now with the Zach Wilson contract issue.
Sure.
In all honesty, this is a lingering thought in the back of my mind that maybe his family could be behind the disputes with the contract. As we know, the mother's been involved with other aspects and the social media and stuff like that. So my fear is that there's some involvement there with the contract.
Well, I mean, I hope that his family's involved in the contract, but what they have to do is have to sit down and go, what's best for him? The best thing for him is to be there from day one, to integrate himself into the situation, to do all the right things, to not miss a practice. His family should know that, and the Jets should know it. There's got to be a middle ground. Stop it. Hardline negotiations at this time, they're dumb. Has nothing to do with money. Andy Martino of SNY just tweeted out, sources close to Scherzer in the Nat situation. Quote, no chance Washington trades him to the Mets, no matter the offer. Story soon.
Okay.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Anthony in Belmore. Anthony.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. What's up, man?
Nothing. I actually was on the phone early this morning with the crew in the morning, and I was actually talking about I'm a Jet fan again, and it is the biggest mush franchise. Whatever they touch turns to mush. They have no luck. Even the announcers, if it's a Jet and Giants, I mean a Jet and Dolphin game, the announcers would say, "Welcome to Giant Stadium." Not even the NFL gives the Jets respect. We're mushed. We have no luck. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, sometimes no luck is a residue of design.
Right,
this isn't about luck. This is somebody's dug in on something stupid.
Yeah, guys, if that's the way you're going to feel about it, nothing's going to work. So what does it matter? If they're mush, then even if he's signed, it's not going to work out. I hate that attitude. It's just never going to work out. So today's the day you're going to call up Peter and go, oh, well, they haven't got it done. Typical Jets. It's all going to fall apart. Man, if it's that easy with a new head coach and a new general manager and things pointing in the right direction, this little bump that we'll completely forget about 24 hours from now, if he signs, now they're mush. They're never going to win. Then why do you even bother rooting for him then? If it's never going to happen, why do you even bother?
Well, both can be true. I felt that way for a very, very long time about Washington. And now I'm starting to feel momentum building of them doing things the right way. I understand, though, the sense of frustration of really? The kid we drafted 2 overall He's not showing up at the beginning. Like, why? Why? How was this not figured out beforehand?
Let's go to Matt. Matt, New Jersey. Matt.
Hey guys, big fan. Just had a call out. The Jets I blame, the agent I blame, but Zach Wilson, 21-year-old kid from Utah, is trying to go through the motions of being a rookie prospect. He's listening to the agents and the people around him. And yeah, he does have the trump card of saying, yeah, I got to get in there, get this deal done. But I can't say I'm ashamed or I'm mad at Zach Wilson in this situation. I think it's a team thing that's dumb, and the agent's got to figure it out. So I put none of the blame on my end on Zach Wilson at all.
Well, I agree with you, Matt. I think that's a good take. He's 21 years old. There are adults in the room that are handling this. And, you know, you would hope that Zach Wilson, and he might just call up his agent and go, I want this done no matter what. But, you know, you hire an agent to do his job. And the agents want to do it, too, because that's a big pelt on their wall that, look, I got offset language. So let's say the Jets release him and there's $10 million left on the contract, and then Zach signs somewhere else for $8 million, and the Jets still have to pay the $10. Well, then all of a sudden you're looking at the agent and say, look, I got him $18 million when he would have gotten $10 million if he stayed with the Jets. So that it's all about, you know, swinging it. Like, who's going to be able to swing it more? But really, there's got to be a middle ground. You're making the kid look bad. You're making the Jets look bad. Both sides have to come together and come to an agreement. This kid has to be there for the first practice tomorrow.
But, you know, and I know he's only 21 years old, but I'm always hesitant to just, like, blame the agent. The agent works for you. You tell the agent, listen, do what you got to do, but make sure that I'm there opening a camp. I'm being drafted by the Jets. I want to be there. So whatever you do, do it in my best interest, but make sure that I'm okay to go out there and play. So I know he's only 21 years old, but come on. The agent works for you. If you want to get it done, and I get all this offset language does not benefit him in the least. It's all kind of team-oriented. But you can see what Trevor Lawrence was able to work it out with Jacksonville. Work it out. Tell them from the very beginning, whatever you do, just make sure I'm there on opening day of camp. I want to meet the press. I want to be there. I want to make this thing work.
And also, now you're putting Robert Saleh in a position where he has to answer these questions. It's supposed to be feel good. It's supposed to be a new beginning. It's supposed to be this guy is the guy. They're going to turn it around, get away from Adam Gase and all of that odious tenure. And now he's got to answer negative questions why his quarterback's not there. Can't do it. It's dumb. Jerry in Hamilton. Jerry.
Yes, how are you, Michael?
Great. You?
Great. Hey, Peter, I hope you're doing well. You guys are the best.
Thank you, man.
But I like to speak about the Jets. I think we all need to take a chill pill. The kid's going to be there. He's going to be there. He's going to get paid. The Jets, I think, are on the right track to go and make a run in the next 2 to 5 years.
Oh, okay, but, I mean, so whatever he's not there today. Today's the day he's supposed to show up. Today's reporting day. He's not reporting. That's a negative. Tomorrow's the first practice. If he's not there, that's a negative. Now, does it set him back from being a great quarterback? No, but why do you want this stuff to be like this? It should all be a feel-good story until they start losing games.
But that doesn't bother
me on this.
But that doesn't bother me as much because it all gets forgotten about. Once he reports and everything, once he starts playing well, nobody's going to remember whether he showed up, what day he showed up to camp. It's all going to be based on how he plays. And I don't think today or tomorrow is going to affect him long term. The first preseason game is not until the 14th. All right? The green-white scrimmage isn't until the 7th of August. All right? So he's got a lot of time to get himself ready here. So we're not to that line yet. I agree with you, Michael. It's the quote-unquote bad optic. But believe me, this will all be forgotten about once he reports and he start playing and he's slinging the ball during training camp and everything looks great. Nobody's going to remember this. Just don't have it affect him being able to play in these games.
Let's go to Randy in Cincinnati. Randy.
Hey, guys. I think it's a little bit overblown, specifically because Trevor Lawrence got the offset language. He fought for that and got it, and he's the number one overall pick. So Zach Wilson, looking at that, is just looking to get that offset language so he can make a little bit more money on his contract. And if you know Joe Douglas, he's probably not going to do that because he's a pretty, you know, financially smart GM. So honestly, it's just a, you know, negotiation thing that'll get wrapped up in a couple of days. I think it's a little bit overblown, to be honest.
But you think, are you a Jet fan, Randy?
Yeah, he was a Jet fan.
You think it's a good thing that Zach Wilson's not going to be at the first practice?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, he needs every rep he can get, especially being a high pick.
Then that's the stopping point. He needs every rep he could get. The Jets don't have a legitimate backup quarterback. This kid played, he had to win the job in college last year. So he needs every single snap that he could possibly make. And as for Jacksonville, they don't believe in fighting on offset language. It's not going to make him any extra money. It's only going to make him extra money if he's released. Right. And if he's released, then everybody's gone anyway.
Right. So you're saying this is on the Jets. Why not just do whatever
it takes? Just give him the offset language then.
Right, because it's such a disaster if it comes to that anyway that you might as well take care of it and have him there first day. That makes sense.
Because what you're doing, Peter, is you're guarding against failure. You shouldn't even be thinking about failure.
But teams get stubborn when they have certain ways they go about things.
I think this is a Jet thing more than a Joe Douglas thing, because they've always had this problem with offset language.
Yeah, and it's probably just something they don't want to set a precedent for other draft picks and all that. And they'll play that game. Hey, listen, if I'm the Jets, I make sure I sign a backup and I start talking about how, hey, I don't know if he's going to start. He's not here, so I don't know if he's going to be starting. And right now, Zach Wilson doesn't have to worry about that. They don't have a quarterback. They start moving forward, and he thinks it's going to jeopardize him playing this year. Maybe things would change, and we get done.
Take a brief time out, revisit everything that we've talked about. The Jets still don't have Zach Wilson reporting day. It's also reporting day for the Giants. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back to the Michael K. Show. So the Giants are reporting, and everything seems to be going well. You know, there's a lot of players on the pup list, but that's really just clerical stuff. Don't know if Barkley's going to be ready for the first game, but for the most part, you know, he should be ready at the start unless there's a setback.
Well, Kim Jones reported that a very, very high up executive of the Giants says that they believe he'll be ready week one.
I think he will, too. Not that I have any inside information, just knowing him and how determined he is and what a workout freak he is, I would say that he'd be ready. So why push him? He doesn't have to play in any of the three preseason games.
Well, you'd like to see how he looks.
Right.
But
you'll be able to see behind
time.
The scenes, yeah.
You know, it's going to be almost a year since the last time he played, but you're right. You know, work out, do the things you have to do.
I think it's 9 months since the surgery. It takes 9 to 12 months. Nine being the short end, so we'll see. John Mara had a Q&A with Steve Cerby in the Post today. Will not say that he expects him to make the playoffs. Will not issue any dictum that they have to make the playoffs, but I think with the money they spent, with Galladay particularly, the weapons that they've given Daniel Jones, I think they expect to make the playoffs, Don. Now, he said we're not going to have any reshuffling of the, and everything's not going to be torn apart if we don't make it, but he would not go out on a limb and say, I expect them to make it. He's saying, obviously, he would be disappointed if they don't.
Right.
But he doesn't want to issue anything, we better make the playoffs. But that's not a real strong division. The Cowboys don't have a defense. They do have an offense. Philadelphia, we don't know what Philadelphia is going to be.
Nice
and Washington, obviously Washington – won last year, but they have a quarterback that could be great 1 week and bad for 2 weeks, and they haven't certainly solved their quarterback situation. One thing that Mara said in the interview, I think any of the four teams could win the division. I think he's right.
I think Philadelphia is in a rebuild here. So I think it's Dallas, Washington,
God hates
and the Giants.
Me.
The one thing I like about this Giants team is their defense. Graham is back as defensive coordinator. They got Jackson from Tennessee, so when you look at their secondary, I think it's very, very good. And I think they did a great job last year defensively.
Three former first-round picks in the secondary.
Yeah, and now you've got they went out and spent money on the offense. So really what it comes down to, what's your quarterback play? Giants and Washington, to me, Peter, are very similar. You feel good about their defense. You wonder what you're going to get out of the quarterback. Now, Fitzpatrick's been there and done that, both positive and negative. So there's a little bit more information. But Daniel Jones has to step up here. Now, he did solve the turnover problem, or at least got better before he got hurt. But it all comes down to how the quarterback plays. I think if Fitzpatrick is good in Washington and Jones is good with the Giants, I think they can battle with Dallas to win this division. If your quarterback play is average and the offense ends up being one of the worst offenses in football, then you're going to be 6-11. And you're not going to make the playoffs.
The only thing I'd say about the Giants, and I feel better about the Giants at quarterback, and I feel better about the Washington defense. Giants defense is good. Washington's a whole level up from you guys. I'm sorry. One level up.
Well, this is one of the best defenses in football.
Who? Giants or Washington or both?
The Giants. I mean, Washington is one of the best
right.
defenses.
And I'd say the Giants are just a little, you know, tier.
Yeah,
under,
I would
a
say there's a rung lower.
Yeah.
And both teams, I think, need to get good quarterback play. I mean, the Giants were one of the worst offenses in football last year.
I'll say this, though, about the Giants. We don't know how high the ceiling is for Jones. I feel I know how high the ceiling is for Fitzpatrick, and it's not that high. Like, maybe Daniel Jones has not reached where he can get to, and maybe this is the year we see the dude who the best version of Daniel Jones becomes the guy who we see 90% of the time. And I think if that was the case, he's a really serious NFL quarterback. We just don't know that we can see it consistently yet.
They've certainly given him the weapons. They've given him everything that he needs. We'll see if the offensive line is up to the task. But for the most part, I mean, what team in football can say they have way more weapons than the Giants? I mean, there are teams that have weapons, like obviously Kansas City. We know that. Even
well,
Tampa
Dallas
Bay,
is pretty stacked. Dallas is a very good offensive team.
Giants are really good. I mean, the big question is the quarterback. The difference with Dallas is that Dak Prescott has excelled at this level before, but he's coming off a terrible injury. But the Giant skill position players, if Barkley's healthy, Don, they're pretty darn good.
Well, what's interesting about the Cowboys to me is that they're the opposite of the Giants and Washington, is that you have confidence in their offense, you just don't know about their defense.
Right.
But the Giants and Washington, I think, have the defense to slow the Cowboys down. I think it's going to be a fascinating year. I do. But I just can't imagine either of those two teams, the Giants and Washington, surviving poor quarterback play. So this is year three for Jones. He's been given weapons. I'm even a little less worried about the offensive line being great because Jones has a lot of athleticism, can make things happen. It's when he was hurt and he became a pocket quarterback that he became a target and he wasn't nearly as good as he was before. But this is a guy that can use his legs, use his athleticism, and that should help an offensive line that might be just above average instead of great. So I'm less worried about that. I'm just hoping that he can go out there and play and be the quarterback that they drafted sixth overall.
Let's go to Anthony and Harrison. Anthony.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, there he is.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
How you doing, Anthony?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Anthony.
Hello?
Would you turn your radio off? It's not that hard.
All right, Anthony, go for it. Here we go.
All right, goodbye.
All right, listen, he wanted to trade for Watson, so obviously he's limited.
Yeah, his thing was he wanted to trade Wilson for Watson. So you're willing to trade your number one draft pick for a guy who has 20 women accusing him of sexual assault, 10 that have actually filed lawsuits. That's what you're willing to do.
Yeah.
That's why you don't have a good phone line. You don't deserve to have a good phone line.
It wasn't the phone line. He just couldn't function as a person.
See, I didn't want to go that far, but you did.
Why not? Why not go that far?
Yeah, his thought process there is very flawed. You could trade for Deshaun Watson right now and never have him play another snap in the NFL.
Right.
Right.
We all of us agree. There's not a soul on earth, who if they found out tomorrow he's going to be fully exonerated and be a stand-up guy for the rest of his life, and he's totally healthy,
Right.
There's practically not a team in the NFL that wouldn't trade their quarterback for him. But that's not the case.
Right. And if that were the case, Zach Wilson and what else?
Right.
Meredith Marakovic of Yes is reporting that Aaron Judge is indeed back in tonight's
About lineup. Time.
I had COVID, you animal.
Well, I know, but I've been ready for him to be back because, like, do we know how seriously sick he was?
Well, he hasn't spoken yet. Maybe he'll speak today and we'll find out.
I wonder if he was actually – I wonder if – but what I'm trying to find out was he actually super sick or was this just bare minimum protocol?
Deep? Well, this is his first day eligible back from the protocol.
Right.
So I'm assuming that he was asymptomatic or everything was okay. Because if he was really, really sick, I don't think 10 days would be enough for him to jump back in the lineup.
Do you know what Laura Stiles said today? I never realized this number.
Cookies?
That's right, cookies. Do you know what she said today in terms of her COVID experience? She was out for 18 days.
And she got that sick?
Yeah. And, like, Don, you always said this, and I always thought it was really smart. When everyone was talking about death, what the number they didn't talk about was the people who were, like, gravely ill but didn't die.
Right.
The next thing that we never think about is, you didn't go to the hospital, but you were severely sick for 18 days. I mean, God willing, the worst I've ever been sick in my life, guys, it lasted bad for, what, 3 or 4 days?
Right.
18's crazy to be severely ill.
Like, if the flu knocked you out, like, if the worst flu you could get knocked you out, you're talking maybe a week.
That would be, I got to tell you, I think I'd remember that. Like, I don't think I've fortunately ever had that. I've heard of people being knocked out by the flu for a week. But 18? Sheesh.
All right, so Rob Domofsky is reporting the Packers, because Aaron Rodgers is back in town, are releasing veteran quarterback Blake Bortles, and Brian Costello of the Post says that Bortles is now a potential backup option for the Jets.
Well, that makes sense, right?
I mean, he should be.
Because even if Zach Wilson works out and he signs tomorrow, they got to find a backup.
I would agree.
Also, you guys see Aaron Rodgers' hair showing up to camp today?
I also saw he had an office T-shirt.
Nice office shirt, but the hair.
I got to ask you this, Peter.
Go ahead.
Anthony and Harrison, he's called back. He wants another try. I'll leave it up to you.
He gets one shot.
All right, Anthony and Harrison.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. If the kid doesn't want to sign, I say trade him to Houston. Get Deshaun Watson back. Get a backup quarterback like Foles. Immediately sign him and move on.
So you're okay, Anthony, with trading for a guy that's 20 women that are accusing him of sexual assault, 10 that are filing a lawsuit?
Yeah,
you're okay.
You can't believe that. I don't believe it.
Oh, it's impossible.
I don't believe it.
So 20 women have made this up.
Even if the NFL suspends him, you still have a backup quarterback like Foles. Or Bowles, you still have one.
Real quick, I'm just curious here, though. What do you package with Zach Wilson to trade for Deshaun Watson?
You'll give him a second round pick.
First of all, if the Texans could get Zach Wilson for Deshaun Watson with everything that's happening around, they would grab it.
Well, that's not what they said yesterday.
Well, they're as Don said, they're playing with the Tonka trucks. Because what team is giving away 4 first-round draft picks for a guy with everything hanging over his head like this?
I'll tell you why.
This guy has a lot of guts to show up in camp after saying that he wasn't even going to show up. This is all about him grabbing money now.
Sure. He doesn't want to
get
this fought.
Guy with a pristine reputation, that reputation's gone. How about this guy? We let him back on and go, I made that up.
Now, did I go too far when I said
nope.
Limited?
Nope.
Probably
Don didn't. Nailed it.
Probably didn't. Before we go to a break, I want to remind everybody that our own Bart Scott will be out at Security Dodge in Amityville tonight from 6 to 9:30 for the Grand Wagoneer Reveal Party. So head on out to Security Dodge. It's at 345 Merrick Road in Amityville. Again, from 6 to 9:30 p.m. Before we break, though, Peter, the ride home from the house, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of review did I personally get from Natalie?
Well, she thought you were terrific. She had a great time.
That's not what she expected to think, right?
I think she did. But
no, I don't know.
But she's a great sport, so She was never.
I'm not a creepo. You're a creepo.
You never said anything that ever bothered her. She thought Jody was great. She thought the kids were great. She said the one thing was she felt a little bad. She wanted to jump in and play baseball too, but she felt like me and Charlie were having a moment, so she didn't want to interrupt.
Oh,
she should have jumped in because you're not that great of a player.
You're not wrong about that.
We also speculated that your text message to Peter 9 minutes after you left suggested you were more concerned about how she felt about the outing than him.
First of all, he's a liar. I didn't text him. I called him.
I said, Don messed that up. I said,
okay. But it was still 9 minutes.
It wasn't 9 minutes. That's not true because I called when I got in my car to go to the stadium. So I had to put a whole suit on. He's lying. The whole thing's a lie. I'm sorry that they even came over.
Wow. That was quick.
Just because of the difference of a few minutes?
I thanked them for coming. I said, I'm glad that you could come. I didn't say, what did she think of me? When I finally got you on the phone, what did she think of me?
No, you said, thank you. We had a great time. And also you wanted to give Natalie a positive review.
Right. She seems like a terrific person.
Thank you. She really is. She's pretty spectacular. Even though you destroyed Bear, which is very hurtful.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, can you believe, Don, that Michael, of all people, has a dog that perpetually jumps in the water, gets soaking wet, and then comes around and rubs its wet body on everyone?
Yeah.
It doesn't rub the wet body.
Oh, my God.
It does shake and sprays.
People. No. Michael, I had double. I didn't mind the shakes. What I mind was my jeans being soaking all day from butter running under my legs. A full, here you go, take my entire wet body all over you.
You don't care for that dog, do you?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I like the dog.
You ever consider leaving the fence open?
No, she knows. She knows she's in a good situation. She's not leaving. All right, let's take a brief time out. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
You know, one more thing on the Zach Wilson stuff. According to Pro Football Talk, the contract squabble between the Jets and quarterback Zach Wilson arises from issues like signing bonus cash flow and offsets for guaranteed money. Does Woody Johnson not have money? So the past two number two overall picks got their full signing bonus within 30 days of signing. So the Jets want to defer it. Really? It's a signing bonus. It's his money. Gave him the money. Why would it take? Why do you want to wait till 2022? So there is precedent. He's not asking for something unreasonable. The only reason the Jets would want to defer it is that they could get interest on it, or they don't have. Maybe I don't understand. Does Woody Johnson's family not have the necessary cash flow to give this guy $20 million? The offset money it's all trash to me anyway. That's ridiculous. But deferring his signing bonus, then the signing bonus isn't worth what it's worth if you defer it.
Listen, you're starting a new era. Which was kind of embarrassing that you had to do it in the first place, right?
Yep.
It was just 3 years ago you started another era with Sam Darnold. And now, 3 years later, you've hit the reset button with another pick. And you're jerking around?
Amazing.
So, again, I'm not going to worry about it until it becomes an issue. And to me, we're probably a week away from it being an issue. But still.
The fact that there are different GMs, right? And different presidents. And the same nonsense goes on year to year to year. Well, what's the one constant? It's got to be something that goes from the top. It's got to be something that the Johnson family believes in. No, I'm not going to give the signing bonus up front. Well, why? You drafted the guy number two. You stunk so bad, you had the number two pick in the draft. You got to give him what he deserves. It's all slotted money. I think it's like $39 million contract for the second pick in the draft, 22 point something of it guaranteed. Give him the $22 million. Why do you think that you get to defer it?
Well, it's that arrogance of, remember, the Giants were the same way when it came to restructuring contracts. That's not what we do. We don't do
that. Right. Well, but they kind of do it now, don't they?
Well, but it's so it just sounds like, well, this is something we don't like to do. And I get that. You want to have self-imposed rules because you don't do these things in a vacuum. You do it for one, you're going to have to do it for a bunch of others. But I'm sorry, in football, there's a difference between being Zach Wilson, drafted as a franchise quarterback, number two overall, in the year when the number one quarterback was looked upon as maybe the biggest quarterback prospect in the last decade, as opposed to a third-round safety. I mean, sometimes you make exceptions, right? Everything hinges on this kid playing well. So wouldn't you like to have him on the first day of camp?
At what point, Don, I mean, you were involved with the Jets forever. What point does it go smoothly? You have one of the best safeties in football. You can't come to an agreement with him. He forces a trade. Now the Jets did well on the trade. Now he can't come to an agreement with Seattle. Now you have another really good safety that you got in the second round. You can't come to an agreement with him.
Right.
I mean, when does it end? When do they keep their players?
When
does
start
all
winning.
Of this nonsense stop?
Well, with that stuff, you start winning.
Well, but maybe you don't win because of this.
Well, it's what, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, you got to do certain things to start to win, but then you can't win until you start to do things. And you know, when you want to be an attractive place to play, and when teams are giving you discounts to stay and not causing, you know, demanding trades and asking for outlandish contracts and bashing the organization on Twitter, that usually happens when you start winning games and people want to play for you. But, you know, that hasn't been the case for this franchise in a long time. Now, I think you should give them the benefit of the doubt because you got a new general manager and a new head coach. But they've had a lot of new general managers and a lot of new head coaches over the last 20-plus seasons, and it hasn't really changed yet. So I can understand the apprehension.
All right, before we get to the Yankee stuff, congratulations to Mark Emanuel from Leonardo, New Jersey. He just won the VIP passes to the Beach Bash. We'll see you there, Mark, and we'll give away another pair a little bit later on. Let's go to Joe. What was that, Don?
I was going to say, if you ever saw Clerks, the quick stop where the movie is going on is in Leonardo.
Aren't they making a Clerks 3, I read?
Yes, they are. So Brian O'Halloran
cannot
play in the softball. Yeah, they had the read-through today.
Can I ask you one thing, and I know you're going to get upset with me. So you're
close
with O'Halloran, right?
Yes.
You can't get a bit part. You're a Jersey guy. They can't give you a part in the movie?
I do well.
I thought about it. And I thought, you know, maybe they can throw me a bone.
Well, why can't they?
Because I didn't ask.
Well, but I'm asking, Brian, why can't he have like a walkthrough? Why can't he have his Coach Romy moment? Why? Why
well,
being
because
that
you
guy?
Got your Coach Romy moment for
because I asked
for begging and asking. I'm not going to do that.
That's the thing. That's
and first
the
of all, Brian O'Halloran, as great as he is not Kevin Smith.
Well, then
I can't read.
Kevin
Smith,
you were talking to Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler was making those decisions. I don't think Brian's making the decisions. Kevin is, and I don't have. I've met him. I've interviewed him, but I don't have a relationship with Kevin.
He's my friend.
Well, I'll put it this way. If Don LaGreca is not in Clerks 3, we will never talk about it. We will never promote it. We'll never do anything. He's a Jersey guy, deserves to be in Clerks 3. He is what Clerks 3 is about.
And I went around, Paul. Look at me.
I mean, I love the first one.
I know you did.
And I like the second one. It seems like a natural. I'm a fan. It would be great promotion for his movie.
That's right.
But Brian doesn't make those decisions, and I'm not going to ask. You understand, Peter. Asking's awkward.
Of course, and he's not obligated to put you in the movie, like Michael makes it sound.
Shh. No, see, Bear agrees with me.
Bear.
That
no,
little unhappy no. dog. Let's go to Joe and Stat. You know what? Sometimes I hate both of you. I'm talking up my guy here, and you're fighting me. I'm trying to get him a part in a movie, and you guys are fighting me.
Well, how do we fight you?
Oh, I don't beg. I'm begging for him.
Well, no, I appreciate that.
But you're putting him in a tough spot now where it's like he has to call out O'Halloran.
Well, I think that if he's not in the movie, his relationship with O'Halloran is splintered and you can't repair it.
But see, that's why you're making it a problem.
Yeah, because Brian's in the movie. You think just because you're in a movie means you get to cast the movie?
No. So he can't like sidle up to Kevin Smith and go, hey, Kevin, I got a guy who'd be perfect and it'd be great promotion for the movie. He has a great afternoon talk show on ESPN. This would be a smart move.
Well, that's nice, but it's not an obligation.
Right. That would still be a favor that Brian would do for me.
Right. You've done a lot of favors for Brian.
No, it's listen, he's done way more for me coming to the softball and all that. I mean, I'm friends with Brian, but that would be something he would have to want to do. And I feel awkward asking for the favor.
No, you should
be
ask. I'm asking right now.
If he's casting the movie, then he'd be doing me the favor.
Mm-hmm.
What he's going to have to do is to do me the favor. He's going to ask Kevin for a favor. So now there's two favors in play here. There's my favor, but then he's got to use a favor with Kevin. Well, that's a tough spot to ask somebody to use one of their favors with somebody else.
Yeah. It's an impossible spot. It's a not doable spot.
That's what I'm asking. Joe in Long Island. Joe.
Hi. I just want to go back to the Jets and Zach Wilson and my frustration as a lifelong Jets fan at the ownership, basically. Because, like you said, this all comes down to the owners, and I just can't stand how they keep doing this time and time again. They did it with Fitzpatrick. They did it with Revis. They did it with Darnold. They do it every time the Jets pick up any momentum anywhere, and it's just driving me insane. I just can't stand it. And, you know, while I was on hold, Michael, you made every single point that I basically wanted to make, and I know it's just – I just can't believe it. It's completely unreal that they would just keep doing this to their fan base, their franchise, and they just can't get out of their own way.
First of all, the Darnold thing was nothing, all right? It was 4 days, didn't affect anything. And Revis deserves as much blame as the Jets do, okay? The Jets were culpable with the whole Rex saying he's the best defensive player in football. But, listen, Revis played a game. Like, how many times was he unhappy, wanting to hold out? So, Revis was to blame just as much as the Jets were. So I get your frustration, but
what about the safety situation, Don? They won't pay safeties. Why? Every good player
they have.
Why is there always something, Don?
But that mistake was – listen, the Marcus May situation is fine. They're going to franchise him, whatever, and that he got the leverage because of what happened with Jamal Adams. The mistake the Jets made was drafting Jamal Adams 8th overall or whatever it was, or 10th overall.
Why can't they ever get out of their own way?
They were not wrong not to want to give Jamal Adams money at the safety position.
And the deal that Douglas made was good.
Right,
but
it was great.
But why draft a safety that high if you're not going to keep him past 4 years?
Right, but that's not Joe Douglas's fault. That was Maccagnan's pick.
Right, I get it. But, I mean, this happens all the time with this team.
Listen, that's why this team hasn't won a Super Bowl in over 50 years. I'm not defending their incompetence. I'm just saying I'm not sure that today's the day with this particular situation that this falls under all their incompetence. Because he could walk into camp tomorrow.
He could. But the fact that we have to – I mean, the luster on a number two pick, a franchise quarterback, should be spotless. It should be spotless. There shouldn't be any negativity surrounding him. Now they're trying to defer a bonus money, offset language. No, you are now defiling the jewel of your franchise. Right. Just get it done. There shouldn't be negativity.
No, that
involved.
I agree with. But you know, but can we hold off right now from saying typical Jets? We haven't even reached the point of typical Jets yet.
Oh no, we have, because he is your number one pick. The face of your franchise is not there on reporting day because it's the typical Jet nonsense when it comes to contract negotiations.
No, that I agree with, but it hasn't harmed anything just yet. If a week from now we're still static with the situation that there's, he's not going to play in the green white scrimmage, there's a possibility he won't play in the first preseason game, well, then I think there's legitimate concern. But if he signs over the next 2-3 days, it's not a big deal. If this was any other organization but the Jets, they probably would get the benefit of the doubt. They obviously don't deserve that because of their history. But let's not freak out just yet. It's a bad look, sure.
Right.
But in the next 48 hours, if he signs, nobody's going to remember this. It doesn't matter.
But we've already had one person say it's on his. If you don't want one Jet fan to think negatively about Zach Wilson, so whoever's wrong, Zach Wilson, there's gonna be a segment of fans that he's greedy. He's just another greedy player. Why would you harm your best thing?
I don't think the fan base, if they know anything about the history of this team, is gonna blame Zach.
Well, so there will be some.
People always
take sides for owners.
But again, that'll all be forgotten. The first practice, and he's slinging the ball all over the place, and Rich Cimini's reporting how he hasn't seen a quarterback this good since Namath. Well, then nobody's going to remember that.
I just – can you imagine if he's not in the first practice? I can't even imagine. It wouldn't make sense to me. This is your guy. Get it done. Offset language. Stop. All right, so Don won up and in on Aaron Boone.
He did. It was
3.5.
It was, Michael, it was, I think it crossed the line. It was a full rant.
Oh, a lot of people believe it was a rant. And yeah, many people luxuriated in it to the point that they were nude because that's what they want. They want Aaron Boone to be the reason that the Yankees are losing. And I will tell you this very honestly. He had an awful game on Sunday. Everything he did was wrong. Turned out wrong. But there's one thing that really concerned me that he did, and it goes back to when Bucky Dent got fired. I've told this story before, and I got George Steinbrenner on the phone. I was a newspaper writer then, and he said, I can't have a guy doubting. I can't have a guy saying he doesn't have answers. I can't have that. A leader always has to have answers. Even if he doesn't have answers, you have to make them up because you have people following you. Aaron Boone, I listened to his post-game press conference driving home. He questioned three of his moves himself. Well, yeah, you wouldn't be wrong. Maybe you could question that, you know. But here's the one that nobody followed up on. And again, Zoom calls are hard to follow up. So I'm not criticizing anybody who covers the Yankees. And I think this runs contrary to something that Don said. I listened to most of Don's rant. He kept saying, I was going batter to batter with Domingo Germán. To what end? Why were you going batter to batter? Because if Domingo Germán was going to pitch a no-hitter, he would have had to throw at least 125 pitches. And if you did that, then that's malpractice. This guy had not thrown that many pitches. I think he went into the eighth inning with 90. He still had 6 outs to go. So let's say if he threw the minimum of 3 pitches to each batter. Now, you get a batter on 1 pitch, I know, but that wasn't going to be the case. That would have been 18 more on top of 90. And you would have been taking him to a place that he should not have gone. I think, in my opinion, I've not been able to contact anybody about this, he was going batter to batter because he was deathly afraid of being criticized for taking the guy out because of a pitch count. And that guy should have been taken out after 7 innings. Damn the no-hitter. The no-hitter means nothing. Absolutely nothing. When you're saying you're going batter to batter, to what end? Now, if he had said I'm going batter to batter because I was trying to squeeze one more inning out of him so I wouldn't have to use Chapman in the 9th inning, okay. But nobody asked him, were you going batter to batter so he could get a no-hitter? That's almost, to me, a fireable offense. Because in 1996, David Cone came back from aneurysm surgery, and the first start he made in Oakland, he threw 7 no-hit innings against the A's. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable story. Joe Torre walked over him and said, I need you for the rest of the year. More important than any no-hitter, I'm taking you out. Walked away. Didn't care what anybody said. And that was before Joe Torre was Joe Torre. He didn't have any rings then. That was just a baseball man doing the right thing. There was no way that at that pitch count, which he hadn't gotten to in over a month and a half, that he should have been allowed to start the 8th inning. None. None. And when you say batter to batter, again, to what end? Batter to batter so he could get 6 more outs to get a no-hitter, which means nothing anymore. Nothing. So the guy gets a double and that's it. So that would lead me to believe it wasn't batter to batter. You still had a 4-0 lead. So if, in fact, after Verdugo doubled over the head of Allen, by the way, Allen should have made that play.
Right.
After Verdugo doubles over the head of Allen, you still keep him in if you're trying to squeeze another inning out of him because there was no diminishing of his stuff. But if you were keeping him in to get a no-hitter and then you lifted him after the first hit, that's unconscionable. There's no way he would have been allowed or should have been allowed to finish that game. The Yankees do not have enough starting pitching to blow out a guy's arm. Now, there's a lot of people I've spoken to, baseball people, that think that Corey Kluber should not have been allowed to get that no-hitter against the Rangers. I disagree with that. It was 108 pitches. It was not going overboard, but they say with his shoulder problems, never should have been pushed to that. And then the very next start, he gets injured, and we still haven't seen him since. But Domingo Germán was at 90 pitches. Batter to batter for what? Why can't anybody ask Boone that question? Were you trying to get the guy the no-hitter? Because that's not your job. And were you afraid of being criticized by the fans? Well, too bad. Too bad. The better thing for the team was to take him out, have a relief pitcher start with a fresh inning, and not have a guy at second base. But Michael, once the guy got a double, and if it didn't involve the no-hitter, Don and Peter, then keep him in.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Michael, I think as early as the sixth, he had guys up in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think so.
So he was going to take him out the second he gave up the hit. Otherwise, why would you have somebody up?
Right, so it shouldn't have been about that.
So that was my argument, is that if it's not about the no-hitter and you were going batter to batter, to me, I would just think at 93 pitches, he gave up a double with a 4-0 lead. You've gone this far. You can't let him face another batter?
Right, because if you want him to get the no-hitter, then you were co-signing him to get to 125 pitches.
Because if Allen makes the play, and I'm with you, I said it yesterday, I thought that was catchable. I thought he misplayed it. So
he turned the wrong way.
If he makes the catch, Michael, he's at 93 pitches with one out. He's not coming out of the game. So he was going to throw more than 93 pitches if he still had the no-hitter going. But to me, if I'm a Yankee fan, yeah, the no-hitter's nice, but I want to win the game. So why isn't it just as important to keep him in beyond 93 pitches to try to get through that inning? He was dealing, Michael. He struck out four batters the inning before.
Well, so what was he seeing that we weren't seeing?
He wasn't seeing anything,
no,
Peter, because he even said we were already pushing it at that pitch count number. They wanted him to throw 80 pitches that day. So he goes to the eighth inning at 90. So he's 10 over what you wanted him to do and what was responsible. So the no-hitter should not have ever been in play. It shouldn't have been a thought in his mind. And to me, I think he was managing scared. I think he was relieved when the guy got the hit because he knew that if he was not going to take him out until he gave up a hit, if he did complete the no-hitter, he'd be at 125 and 130 pitches. And for all the fans that keep saying, oh, just let him in, don't baby. That's what pitching is now. You do baby them. They're not built for this. So that's number one. Number two, you then bring in Loaisiga, which I have no problem with. But after he got the three straight hits, why would you let Loaisiga when you have Britton warming? Well, why would you let Loaisiga pitch to Kike Hernandez? And you can't say lefty-righty. That's nonsense. Because look at what Cora did in the previous game or earlier in the game. He brought in the left-hander Taylor, even though that Stanton was coming up. Why? Because Taylor was better than the pitcher that he took out. And the way Loaisiga was pitching, although he's been great all year, Britton was going to be better. And then the infield back. He didn't have a good excuse for that either. That's why that was a really bad inning for Aaron Boone. And I think he knew it was a bad inning because he even said, you have the right to question that. You have the right to question that. That's also bad. When you're a manager, you have to say, yep, that was the move to make. I understood why he had the infield back, because if you have the infield in and a ground ball squeaks through, that's two runs you've given up the lead. But you could have at least had it halfway. You could have had it halfway to hedge your bets. Because you knew that if the Red Sox had tied that game, I'm sorry, you were losing the game. I mean, you could see it, Don, as you were watching. It's unfolding in front of you.
Yeah.
If they tie the game, the Yankees are losing the game. They're demoralized. They go from having a no-hitter being pitched and a 4-0 lead to being tied. Yeah. They're going to lose anyway. So you've got to cut that runoff at third.
It was the exact opposite of Saturday.
Right.
It just happened so quick.
Bad scene.
No one.
Bad scene.
Germán didn't say anything after the game?
He just said, it was an unbelievable quote. He said it was like being on top of the world and all of a sudden you're falling off and you just don't know what happened. It wasn't his fault. He pitched great. He was unbelievable. And one other thing, and this is what Yankee fans don't want to hear, because the ones that want Boone and Cashman fired. Listen, losing 3 out of 4 to the Red Sox, you probably buried yourself and you have no chance to win the American League East. Red Sox are good. Red Sox are probably going to make a deal, and they'll get better. And the team in front of them that they're playing tonight, Tampa Bay Rays, they're really good as well. But the Yankees are 2 games back in the loss column in the wild card. Why would you give up on the postseason? You play a one-game wild card. Let's say you play against the Tampa Bay Rays. You go down to St. Pete and you have Gerrit Cole on the mound? You don't like your chances? And then after that, as they say, it's a crapshoot the postseason. Why would you give up on the season and start selling off parts when you're two games back in the loss column? Those are defeatist fans. They just have a narrative in mind. Boone has to go. Cashman has to go. Well, first of all, you could see. If Boone's not gone yet, he ain't going this year. Now, if they don't make the playoffs, maybe he does go. So since Boone's not going, don't you want the team to make the playoffs? There have been teams that won the World Series as a wild card, Don. Why would you just defeat that and say they have no chance? They're two games back. You think that the Oakland A's are that much better than them? Seattle's in front of them? You think Seattle's a better team than the Yankees?
Well, while the Yankees were losing 3 out of 4 to Boston, Seattle was taking 3 out of 4 from Oakland.
Yes.
So
would save the Yankees bacon.
No, but fans want scorched earth. Yeah, I bet you there's a lot of Yankee fans who say, you know what, if you tell me we're going to make the wild card, we're going to win the wild card game, and we're going to go to game 6 of a league championship series and lose, you know what, I'd rather just not make it and fire everybody. Yes, I do think there are Yankee fans that are tired of that because they don't believe the team's going to do anything in the playoffs anyway. And it's a real tough narrative to sell, Michael, that they can, considering much better teams than this couldn't win in the postseason in the last decade. So what did you take exception to that I said yesterday?
No, because did you say that they shouldn't let him go for the no-hitter?
No, I said they should have let him face another batter after the double.
Okay, then we're in lockstep. Then I misunderstood. Because
no, I don't care
about
the no-hitter.
A lot of fans are saying, oh, just let him go for the no-hitter. What are you concerned about pitch count? Well, you have to be. That's his job.
No,
that's my Matt Blake's job.
Was exactly yours, is that if you're leaving him in to try to get the no-hitter, then why aren't you trying to leave him in as long as you can to try to get the win?
Exactly.
You're not that far removed from what happened on Thursday or what happened the previous two Sundays ago when you blew it against the Astros. Why are you so hot to get to this bullpen when you got a pitcher that's dealing? He struck out 4 batters, the heart of the order. What did he strike out? Bogarts, Devers, and Martinez to close out the 7th. And he gives up a double that should have been caught. And if it's caught, he stays in, Peter, to face another batter. Why not let him kind of finish what he started at that point? And then if he gives up another hit, then give him the hook.
Now, you don't think, Peter, you keep trying to jump in. Do you think that the ball should not have been caught?
No. I went back and watched it again. He turned around twice.
Yeah.
He misplayed.
I mean, it's not an easy play.
It's a play
that you should make 80 out of 100 times.
Who was that again?
Greg Allen.
Yeah, I mean, if it's someone else, maybe it gets caught. But it's a catchable ball. It's a hard ball to catch. But I told Don this yesterday. I stand by this. If Herman's pitching that well, I don't care if that ball goes out. I keep him in the game.
But they knew. This is what bothers me. They knew that he was at a pitch count he should not have been at.
But he was already there.
He's already there. So once you committed to, well, we're going to go batter for, again, I keep using the same phrase, to what end?
Now,
batter to batter to get him a no-hitter? Then he's going to throw 130 pitches, and that is malpractice toward the pitcher.
Now, when you say batter to batter in this case, you mean the bullpen's up and you're waiting on every batter to see if he survives?
Yeah, and he didn't say if it was batter to batter so he could get a no-hitter, which would have been criminal because the guy would have had to throw at least 125 to 130 pitches. You are jeopardizing his health if you do that.
He did not want to be the guy to do what Torrey did in 96.
And that's scary, Don. If he cares about what people say, he's in a bad spot.
I wanted to get your opinion. We're running out of time here for this segment. Of the real reason why I called him a puppet. We haven't addressed that yet.
We'll come back. We'll do that.
Michael should address it next, Don.
Yeah. Don's going to tell me his real reason, and I'll say whether I believe it or not. Let's take a look at this day in Yankee history, brought to you by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. I actually saw a video of this today with Bill White and Phil Rizzuto doing the play-by-play. It's on Twitter. It's great. 1988, Tommy John becomes the first pitcher to commit 3 errors on one play when he won, bobbles Jeffrey Leonard's grounder, and then to recover, 2, throws the ball down the right field line that Dave Winfield retrieves and fires home. Perfect throw. And then Tommy John cuts it off for some reason and relayed the throw wildly to the plate past Don Slott, 3rd error, allowing 2 runs to score. The 45-year-old Southpaw's 4th inning miscues didn't stop him from getting the victory in the Yankees 16-3 rout of the Brewers in the Bronx. 3 errors on one play. That's this day in Yankee history, brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.